Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla. Once again, Layla Mutin is our Hoffman Center nutritionist with a master's degree in nutrition as well as being a registered dietitian. And Layla, I want to invite our listeners to make sure that they subscribe to our Intelligent Medicine newsletter.
Yes.
And what's in it this week that, from your end?
From my end, smoothies. What is wrong with my smoothie?
Wow.
So read our newsletter and I'll tell you what's wrong with your smoothie.
Awesome.
In case you're doing it wrong.
That's great. And, you know, unbeknownst to you, because I know you don't really do a lot of Facebook, I post these things on Facebook, mm-hmm. and they're very popular. A lot of people really like them, your things I post them. And this week I'm talking about something called the Evolution of Medicine Summit, which I'm happy to be a part of. It's going to be starting on September 8th, and it'll go on through September 15th. And it, you know, speaking of intelligent medicine, this is a great gathering of not just myself, but 40 luminaries in the field of complementary and alternative medicine, including Mark Hyman and Jeffrey Bland, and, you know, many of the people that you know in this field. And it's an opportunity for our listeners for free, that's the key word, free, to sign up and listen to some of these outstanding lectures and discussions that are, you know, a wide variety of topics related to complementary alternative medicine. So we'll post a link at drhoffman.com, and I'm talking about it in my message to our newsletter readers this week. So it's something I believe in because we're getting the word out about the direction I think that medicine is really going to evolve toward. I'm very excited about the prospects for a really integrative model, a patient-centered model, mm-hmm. to take center stage in American medicine. We've struggled for so long to have our voices heard in this field, and I think that more and more consumers, and now even mainstream medical organizations, hospitals, are beginning to listen to this message, and it's I think the groundswell is huge.
Yeah.
So anyway, happy to report that. So let's continue with questions.
Okay, this one comes from Miriam. Hello, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. My son of 23 has white patches on his back. Oh, I read that. I said that backwards before the break. My son of 23 years old has white patches on his back. He's worked outside most of the summer, exposed to sunlight, but has been careful of sunburn, so he's not sunburning. Mm-hmm. He's a strong, athletic young man. Is this related to an autoimmune condition? What could he be lacking in minerals or vitamins? Thank you both for your great program.
Okay. So,
sounds like psoriasis.
Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, it could be. Mm-hmm. It could be. But mm-hmm. white patches, if it's patch, you know, if it's like flaky, that could be psoriasis. Mm-hmm. However, you know, just simply loss of pigment, it could be an autoimmune disease called vitiligo, which is a loss of pigment.
Oh.
You know, which is like the Michael Jackson disease.
Looks like white patches, right?
Right. When he was with the Jackson 5, you know, he was a different color than when he ended his life. And it wasn't just because he bleached his skin. He actually had vitiligo. I think he did some cosmetic things to further that process so that his skin was whiter.
You know, he had a double whammy in autoimmunity. He also had lupus, Michael Jackson.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
So, well, yeah.
God only knows what kind of stuff he did to his body, though.
Yeah.
It's just really, it'd be interesting to hear, because sometimes these celebrities get into really excessive plastic surgery and quacky medical procedures, and, you know, who knows what she did. Anyway, the other possibility is that he might have a condition called tinea versicolor, which is actually a superficial fungal infection, usually, and responds to topical antifungals, and also responds to a lower sugar candida diet. But I think it's appropriate that he get a dermatological checkout for this and find out what indeed he has.
Wow. Oh, now,
Is there a nutritional thing for? Let's assume he has. Let's assume, for the sake of argument, I don't know that he has this, but let's assume that he has autoimmune vitiligo.
Mm-hmm.
It has been suggested that people take tyrosine for that. The reason is that tyrosine is a building block for melanin. Melanin is the pigment that darkens skin. However, there's the problem. Is that you can, in my opinion, you can take all the tyrosine you want. The defect is not inadequate tyrosine. It's that there is an autoimmune attack on the pigment cells in the skin that make melanin. So you can take tyrosine till the cows come home. That's not going to help. It's also been suggested that people take vitamin B12. Well, actually, individuals with vitiligo are at higher risk for pernicious anemia, but you know, a relatively small percentage, you know, maybe 10% of them have pernicious anemia, which requires that they take more vitamin B12, but still, that's not going to make their skin darker. So, I mean, I guess you could take some type of internal tanning pill that has, you know, something like astaxanthin or something like that that makes your skin yellowish or orange, but then it's still not going to look good because it'll give you a phony color.
Exactly.
I mean, those there literally are things that you can take internally that are like oral tanning pills, but they don't really give you a nice, they don't necessarily match your skin tone. You know, you're going to get yellowish or orange from those and not...
Yeah, from eating too many carrots or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's sort of like that principle, yeah.
Yeah.
Astaxanthin will do that at high doses.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, and what if it's a fungal infection?
If it's a fungal infection, yeah, I mean, we do see a lot of people with that. In Italian, they call this fungi di mare, fungi di mare.
And it sounds like a dish.
Like,
okay.
Right, no, it's like fungus of the sea or mushrooms of the sea, which is that you spend, and it makes sense, you know, you spend a lot of time in the water, and or you sweat a lot, and you get a fungal infection, and it depigments your skin. So the solution is, you know, I always have a little trick question for people who have this. They say, you know, what's your hygiene like? And they kind of look a little insulted. And they say, well, I shower at least twice a day. I go, no, that's actually not good because you're immersing your skin in water. You're making it moist all the time. And as a result, it's a perfect place for fungus to colonize. And you should bathe less, shower quickly, and use a hairdryer to thoroughly dry your skin, and make sure you use cotton.
Hairdryer is a great idea. Uh-huh.
Yeah, make sure you use cotton underwear to absorb any excess moisture. And, you know, you need to go on a Candida diet, a low-sugar diet.
Wow.
And then, you know, the dermatologist or we can give you some topical antifungal, usually mixed with a little steroid, and that can help treat that condition.
Right.
And I guess, I mean, you can take some of these natural things for Candida. Let's name some of the natural things for Candida. I guess they could work.
Like olive leaf,
yeah.
Oregasilin.
Sure.
Certainly those. What would you think of topical Manuka for that?
And that might be good because Manuka is a wonderful antifungal. Yeah. Even coconut oil, extra virgin coconut oil, has some antifungal effects. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are a variety of things that could be used. I mean,
okay.
Yeah.
So, Miriam, have your son get checked out. Make sure it's not an autoimmune condition. And
by the way, all those things won't, the latter things won't work on an autoimmune condition. They won't do anything.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It would work for a fungal infection, but
yeah.
For auto, well, for, okay, so the we talked about the autoimmunity.
Mm-hmm.
A nutritional gold standard, if it's vitiligo,
yeah.
Is really also a Candida-type diet, which is also gluten-free and dairy-free.
Yeah, I mean, because there may be triggers of the, they may be mm-hmm. triggers for the autoimmunity, and of course, things that can help in any autoimmune condition, vitamin D and omega-3 fish oil, maybe ModuCare, Stearinol, which is made by the same company that makes Kyolic. It's made by Wakanaga. It's also good for many autoimmune conditions, and that might help slow the progression of that. It won't repigment the skin, but it'll slow the progression.
Okay. Best of luck, Miriam.
Yeah.
Our next question comes from Judy in Savannah, Georgia. Dear Leila and Dr.
Love that
Hoffman,
place. Love that. That's a great place.
Yeah.
Lots of history down there.
Our mattresses, which are twin adjustable beds, are 20 years old, and my husband is threatening to buy a commercial / toxic mattress unless I discover something better.
Mm-hmm.
Over the months, I've been researching this, and I've come up with more questions than answers. For example, natural latex, organic wool, cotton. We both like a firm surface. Your help would be appreciated.
Yeah. Catching me a little unawares. I didn't have time to research the type of bedding that I think would be best. But here's the problem, is that most bedding by law is required to be fire retardant. And actually, the laws are more stringent in California than they are in the other 49 states. Everything about California is much more, you know, difficult.
Mm-hmm.
There's just all kinds of, you know, well-intentioned litigation, not litigation, but well-intentioned legislation that leads to new requirements and litigation.
Yeah.
But that's just an aside. There are requirements in many states to apply chemical fire retardants to mattresses. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this lady, with her own research, probably in a better position than I am at this point. I haven't refreshed my my recommendations.
Well, here's
on bedding.
What I think. Yep. Here's what I think. We're not sleeping on the mattress itself. Mm-hmm. I think it's more important that the bedding itself, your sheets,
okay,
your sheets, your pillowcases, all of that can be natural and organic and cotton or a blend or something like that. If you're very concerned about the toxicity of your mattress, I think an allergenic cover would be helpful.
Yes.
One of the you know, to keep away the dust mites and so mm-hmm. forth.
Right. And that is an issue because, you know,
yeah,
it's kind of icky, but dust mites actually live in the mattress, and it's almost
yep.
invariable. Now, it's not like bed bugs, God forbid, or lice. But these tiny organisms hide in the mattress, and they actually eat your skin. Your skin is sloughing off at an enormous rate, you know, like an ounce every month. Like very, very large amount of skin flakes come off of people. And, you know, it's not just obvious as dandruff, it's microscopic skin particles. That's what they eat. And then they, the body reacts to the presence of these things as a strong allergen, and that's why people are allergic to dust. It's mostly the dust mite that they're allergic to. And the mattress needs to be sealed off. So
yeah,
these allergenic covers literally seal the mattress off. They might protect harmful chemicals from exuding from the mattress. They might also help to protect the mattress from being infiltrated by dust mites who can reside there. So that might be a solution. You know, anytime you're ordering a new item, it's not a bad idea to stack it up in the garage or something like that outside the house so that it can gas off. You know, it can actually, literally some people are so sensitive that they, when they get new furniture, they have to let it sit for a while, you know, on the porch or in the garage to let the strong chemical odors exude. And then after a while, it's safe to bring them inside because they react.
I remember several years ago, we got a sectional sofa in our apartment, and we didn't get the Scotch Guard. We didn't want any of
yep.
it. We didn't
yep.
want anything toxic.
Sure.
But, you know, it still took a month for that mm-hmm. odor, that new sofa
yeah.
aroma.
It's like a new car smell, you know. And it's,
yeah,
but it's
to go away.
Right.
So, yeah.
Now, people have to remember that anything that you can smell, our noses are very, our olfactory nerves are so sensitive, just like our eyes can pick up a few photons of light very distant. Our olfactory nerves can detect the presence of just a few molecules of a foreign substance. And when you smell something, that means it's a chemical. There is a chemical there. And that chemical, depending on your sensitivity, can create problems for you. It will get into your bloodstream. It will go to your organs. And that ain't good.
Absolutely. So best of luck. And hopefully you'll find something, Judy. All right. We have another question.
I wish we had a sponsor, like a betting sponsor. You know,
yeah.
then we could say, you know, like yeah. call 1-800.
Maybe now you'll get one.
Yeah. Hey, anybody out there is like you're in the betting business, and you know, uh-huh. you think you got a good product, pitch it to us.
Definitely. This comes from Ted. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I've been a listener for almost 15 years. I never miss downloading and listening to your podcasts. I've learned so much valuable information over the years.
I got to say,
all the health benefits.
That is so awesome. I really appreciate it because, you know, here we are. You know, we're working very hard, and, you know, both of us, we have a busy practice daytimes. And, you know, in my spare time, my extra time, I put out these podcasts. And, of course, Layla participates in a podcast and also writes a weekly blog. And it's just so gratifying to hear that people not only are not overwhelmed by the amount of content, but they actually keep up with the content. That, to me, is just very gratifying that there's such a thirst for knowledge that people want to follow this. So you're making my day.
Ted's question is, what is the supplement PQQ, which is pyroloquinoline quinone, which is related to CoQ10. Ted wants to know, how does it relate to CoQ10 and ubiquinol, What does it do? I actually did a little bit of research here.
Good.
What PQQ helps to do is to generate some fresh mitochondria. It's the other, it's being called by scientists as the other CoQ10. So, which is very, very interesting because so many of our chronic diseases have to do with mitochondrial dysfunction. This might be something else in the arsenal of helping out, even as an adjunct to ubiquinol and CoQ10, taking PQQ. Critical role of PQQ across a range of biological functions has only gradually emerged. This is according to Life Extension. I really do like their research. It provides extraordinary defense against mitochondrial decay. But the most exciting thing is it can stimulate the growth of fresh mitochondria. This is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we didn't know that we could regenerate brain cells until very recently.
Mm-hmm.
But that we can generate new mitochondria. That's actually very, very good. So this is all, PQQ has become now part of the cellular anti-aging medicine.
Along with things, standbys like coenzyme Q10, ubiquinol, carnitine, possibly ribose, NADH. You know, these are some of the things that purport to fuel the mitochondrion. And yeah, I got to say, I'm looking at the PQQ research. I don't think the research is as robust as the research is on CoQ10 and ubiquinol. And I noticed that in terms of availability, it's not all the vitamin manufacturers are signing on to PQQ. It's one of those phenomena that's sort of looming on the radar screen, but it hasn't really made it to the big time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking at it carefully. It's sort of on my B list. It's not the first thing that I would consider for patients who have mitochondrial disorders, which would be chronic fatigue syndrome, heart failure, brain problems, dementia, Parkinson's disease, ALS. You know, these are classic mitochondrial diseases, even fibromyalgia. And, you know, it may or may not be something that's worth including in a nutritional regimen. I don't have a problem with it. I just am not sure that it's going to be in the pantheon of the top 10 mitochondrial nutrients, ultimately.
Yeah, yeah. The reason actually Ted brings this up is he heard it during a radio commercial from Wilner Chemists.
Okay.
So that's probably, yeah.
Yeah, they're always talking about cutting-edge stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now we actually have a question about another supplement.
Okay.
Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, this comes from Lorraine. Do you have an opinion on the supervised use of advanced cellular silver and advanced cellular zeolite, both extra strength, for systemic candida overgrowth and heavy metals detoxification? Always listening and appreciating everything you share. Heartfelt thanks for always being there. Thank you, Lorraine.
Yeah, on the subject of silver, I think there's a lot of controversy. And, you know, I just looked this up. And there are actually people who are silver mavens, people who are experts on the subject of silver. And really disturbingly, their claim is that none of the manufacturers, none of the above, make a silver that is safe and effective for oral consumption.
Wow.
And this is not the FDA. The FDA is really against silver. I mean, they're saying it's toxic, it'll turn you blue. I don't think that's necessarily the case if it's the proper form of silver. But what these people are saying is you got to make bathtub silver. You got to make it on your own, and they give you instructions with like batteries, and you get like some pure silver, you know, at a jewelry exchange.
Talk about heavy metal toxicity.
I know,
oh,
but
no,
so what? I mean, I think that's concerning. It's suspect. I have a problem with people making stuff that's not subject to quality control and then ingesting large amounts of it, although there's a whole underground of people consuming silver. Now, there are cases of what's called argyria, which is the blue man syndrome of people who've overzealously consumed silver. And it's said that they poison themselves by making the silver that wasn't pure enough or wasn't in colloidal form and whatever. And if that can go wrong...
Did you ever see that blue man on TV? He was on Oprah. This was many years ago.
You know,
he was indeed blue.
Not only that,
from taking silver, yeah.
One of those guys came to the office once. Were you there that day? This is a very true story. Oh. Is that I was walking up to the front desk in our office one day, and I saw what appeared to be ostensibly from the back an African American man talking to our gals up front, you know, at the front desk. And I also noticed that they had sort of a nervous expression on their face as he was talking to them. And then I noticed that in addition to having dark skin, he had very silver hair. And I thought, this is kind of a straight silver hair. So this is kind of an anomalous look, you know, dark skin with silver hair. And then as I got closer.
I think of Don King.
No, right. No, but exactly. But when I went closer, I realized that his skin was not black or brown. Mm-hmm. It was blue. It was like a dark shade of blue, like aquamarine blue.
Wow.
And he turned around and I saw he had Caucasian features and a very deep dark blue complexion. And he was trying to basically sell us on the concept of silver. And he left some material and then he walked out of the office and the girls kind of rolled their eyes, shook their heads and said, that was weird. And so, and look, the point being, I recommend silver. I think silver is great for topical things. Mm-hmm. I think it can be great as a gargle and as a nasal installation for patients who have chronic sinusitis. And I think it's generally safe. You know, you might swallow minute amounts of it, but I don't see that as being a big problem. I think the people who guzzle silver in an effort to cure Lyme disease or, you know, some kind of deep-seated viral infection, chronic fatigue syndrome or something, I think that's misguided. Mm-hmm. And I know that some people will take exception to what I say, but I just don't think there's enough really good quality research on the internal consumption of silver. You know, they're using silver to coat catheters that are prone to infection. Silver is a really good way to protect catheters from developing biofilms that result in urinary tract infections. Mm-hmm. And so, and you know, you can go to sporting goods places, you can buy gym clothes that are impregnated with silver, and that actually prevents them from getting smelly because it has an antibacterial effect. But I'm just concerned about internal consumption of lots and lots of silver.
Yeah.
We have a product called Argentine, A-R-G-E-N-T-Y-N, which we use with patients. But we use it topically, and we use it intranasally. We use it as a gargle, and I think it's got some value there. Because it is an anti-infective, a very old principle of using silver. You know, they used to put silver eye drops into babies' eyes when they were born because the concern was that they might have been exposed to gonorrhea in the mother's birth canal, and silver eye drops would prevent blindness. I think this is done to this day, silver nitrate. And
wow.
So there's something there, but I have to say I'm a little bit of a state of confusion about the safety and quality of products that are advertised for internal consumption.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. That just about wraps up the time that we have for today's Q&A with Layla. I see you have a couple of additional questions, but we'll save them over for next week. And those of you who have additional questions, radioprogram@AOL.com is the place to send them, and we will endeavor to answer them on the air. And we'll see you again next week. Thanks for joining us, Layla, and have yourself a great Labor Day. Last hurrah.
Oh,
huh?
You too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a great Labor Day to our listeners. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.